I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, the National Transportation Safety Board today revealed some of its investigation of last year's deadly Amtrak derailment in Philadelphia. First up, in Norristown, a judge tomorrow will hold the first hearing about criminal charges against comedian Bill Cosby. With hordes of media descending to cover the case, Norristown's preparing for its moment in the limelight. WHYY's Laura Benchoff has this story from the Montgomery County seat.
Lori Molyneux is single-handedly serving a modest lunch crowd behind the counter at Cezano's, an Italian deli across the street from the Montgomery County Courthouse in Norristown. With the first round in what could be a long case involving celebrity Bill Cosby starting, she says local police told her to expect a crush of customers.
They told us that they expected a lot of people where the media is going to be parked, and about us opening earlier, which we are.
So she's rolling in at 6 instead of 8 a.m. to start pouring coffee and slinging the deli's signature pork sandwiches. Norristown is gearing up for what the Associated Press is calling perhaps the biggest Hollywood celebrity trial of the mobile news era. Richard Wyckoff is the president of the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters.
We hope to minimize our presence, but anytime people see production trucks, it's definitely an attention getter.
With 22 satellite trucks and some 80 broadcast journalists showing up to cover the hearing, that presence will be hard to ignore. But will those extra bodies be a boon or a nuisance to Norristown? Police Lieutenant Todd Dillon is hoping it will help a city where downtown restaurants and businesses can struggle to survive.
If it goes smoothly, then we look good. There's some economic development, you know, people coming in using our establishments.
Journalists have to register to attend the hearing, but how many members of the public and protesters will show up is anyone's guess. The other thing is, this hearing could be the beginning of a months or years-long circus. Or it could be a single hectic day. Lawyers for Cosby have asked a judge to dismiss charges on the grounds that a former district attorney promised him immunity.
You know, if a ruling's made in favor of Cosby, there will be no preliminary hearing. My understanding is it'll be done at that point.
Even if the case stays alive, Cosby's lawyers have fired off a bunch of challenges intended to keep the matter from reaching trial. So that could be the difference between a little attention and expense for Norristown and a lot. Laura Benchoff, WHYY News.
The engineer of the Amtrak train that derailed in Philadelphia last May told investigators that he has very little memory of the crash that killed 8 and injured 200 others. WHYY's Katie Colinari reports that the engineer's comments are part of a trove of documents released today by the National Transportation Safety Board.
The more than 2,000 pages of evidence don't explain why the train was going more than twice the speed limit when it derailed. Interview transcripts show the engineer, Brandon Bostian, told investigators the last thing he remembers is accelerating. Then his memory fades until he sensed he was in a curve and hit the emergency brake. The train's assistant conductor said she heard Bostian say the train had been hit by something a few minutes before the crash. Railroad safety consultant Richard Beal believes that's the key to figuring out what happened.
I can tell you by firsthand experience, when something hits you out of the clear blue, it sounds like a cannon going off, sounds like a possible gunshot. And your reaction is to flinch, to duck. And there's a very good possibility this man hit his head.
The FBI found there was no evidence the train had been hit by a bullet, but that did not rule out the possibility of a rock. While the NTSB says it will release its explanation of the accident in the spring, lawyers representing some of the victims and their families say the evidence released points the finger squarely at Bostian. Here's Philadelphia attorney Bob Mongaluzzi.
And the problem remains his changing story, which started with, I have no recollection whatsoever, and now becomes, I have memory of what occurred, but I mysteriously have a gap as well.
Amtrak has admitted fault for the crash. The legal question is how much money victims and their families will receive. Federal law caps payouts in Amtrak crashes at $295 million. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
As the controversy grows around Flint, Michigan's tainted water supply, NewsWorks blogger Solomon Jones sees it as yet another case of environmental injustice inflicted upon poor communities of color.
There is rage surrounding the discovery that the water supply in Flint, a majority black and impoverished city in Michigan, contains unacceptably high levels of lead. But the Flint situation is not unique. Poor black communities all over the country have long been subject to the kinds of environmental hazards that have put people at risk for brain damage, disease, and even death. In Flint and other such communities, the problems can often be traced to government officials. Bishop Bernadelle Jefferson, a Flint community leader, told me as much in an interview. If we hadn't continued to scream out and shout out that there were problems with the water, she said, we would still have leadership telling people that the water was fine, that there was nothing wrong with it. Governor Rick Snyder didn't listen to the community, Jefferson said. Now Flint has become the latest example of America's environmental injustice, an injustice that's often driven by race. I spoke to Ronald White of the Center of Effective Government, who told me that there are more than 12,000 facilities in the U.S. that store extremely hazardous chemicals. Impoverished people of color are most likely to live near those places. Take Mossville, Louisiana, for example. The town, which was established by freed slaves in the late 1700s, is now surrounded by 14 different heavy industry facilities that produce toxic pollution, White said. People in that community are dying from higher rates of cancer and other diseases. But it's not just happening in the South. It's happened right here in Pennsylvania. In 1995, the EPA, in partnership with the state, completed the Chester Risk Assessment Project, which was part of an initiative to study environmental issues in Chester. The EPA noted that 70% of residents in Chester were minorities, and that the community had the highest concentration of industrial facilities in Pennsylvania, including two oil refineries, a large medical waste facility, a wastewater treatment plant, and a large trash-to-steam facility. Chester, at the time, had the highest infant mortality rate, coupled with the lowest birth rate in the state. Chester was also the poorest community in Delaware County, and 60% of the children's blood lead levels were above the CDC's recommended maximum level, according to the report. In other words, what's happening in Flint is not new. It's been happening for decades in cities all over this country, and it's more than just happenstance. Sometimes it's environmental racism. If we truly believe that the people of Flint deserve justice, then we must examine what's happening in other American communities of color. If we refuse to act, we're helping to kill off an entire class of people. If we sit still, we are sanctioning racism. I'm Solomon Jones.
Solomon Jones writes the Philadelphia Experiment blog at newsworks.org. Turning to this evening's headlines, Thomas Farley, the former New York City Health Commissioner who targeted smoking and salt during his tenure there, has been named to the same position in Philadelphia. Mayor Jim Kenney announced Farley's appointment today, saying his out-of-the-box approach to public health and his experience make him a valuable asset. In his 4 years as New York's health commissioner, Farley succeeded in banning smoking at beaches and public parks. He also raised the legal age to purchase tobacco to 21. His department also led the city's initiative to work with major food companies to reduce sodium levels in their products nationwide. In Delaware, a Superior Court judge has halted all trials and penalty hearings in capital murder cases while the state Supreme Court mulls the constitutionality of its death penalty law. Last week, the Supreme Court accepted several questions submitted by a Superior Court judge regarding the roles of judges and juries in Delaware death penalty cases. Those questions were prompted by a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling against Florida's death sentencing scheme. Delaware's sentencing scheme is similar to Florida's. 48 degrees at 6:15. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Showers tapering this evening and then gradual clearing overnight, falling back to 34 degrees. Tomorrow, sunny. Tuesday's high 52. And then rain returns on Wednesday. Showers heavy at times, high all the way to 65 degrees. Thursday, a mix of sun and clouds, high 48, and ahead to Friday, mostly sunny, high 43. Still ahead, cities in Pennsylvania are looking to hire more Latino and bilingual police officers, but finding them is harder than it sounds.
It is the lack of people understanding the cultural difference. It's deep. It's deep. And it's a shame that 2015, 2016, we're still going through this.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
That huge methane gas leak in Porter Ranch, California, near Los Angeles, it just keeps on going.
Nuts. You know, we didn't think it was going to spread that far to where we're at, but eventually it's doing it now. And they should check more.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, living and working in bad air. That's next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace follows NewsWorks Tonight at 6:30 this evening on WHYY.
The National Museum of American Jewish History at 5th and Market supports WHYY and presents Arlene Alda, Fulbright Scholar and author of Just Kids from the Bronx, Telling It the Way It Was, on February 3rd at 7 p.m. The conversation takes you on a journey through the oral histories of Bronx-bred dreamers and doers that span six decades, from Carl Reiner to Neil deGrasse Tyson, including her own childhood recollections. Details and tickets at nmajh.org or 215-923-3811.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Many Pennsylvania cities have seen their Latino population skyrocket in recent years. City police departments have been slow to adapt to the changing demographics, and with strict state laws, slashed budgets, and fewer qualified applicants, it's going to take some creativity for them to catch up. Keystone Crossroads' Eleanor Klibanoff reports.
Officer Diego Arcianegas waits patiently in the living room of a tidy apartment in Northwest Reading. It's nearly dinner time, and the smells coming from the kitchen remind him of home. Unfortunately, he's not here to eat. He's here to follow up with a 14-year-old girl who'd been reported as a runaway.
Hey, how are you? Everything good? Why didn't you call your mom and let her know? She was worried about you.
This is an assignment very few officers in the Reading Police Department could have handled. Her mother speaks only Spanish. Arcianegas is one of Redding's 21 bilingual officers on a force of 157.
1647.
Back in his squad car, he explains why that's a challenge.
During midnight, so it was only two of us spoke Spanish. So I could be on the northwest and I could be called to the southeast for translation back and forth all throughout the city.
The city of Redding is nearly 60% Latino. There are more Latinos in Reading than there are people in the city of Harrisburg, but only 13% of the police officers speak fluent Spanish. Latino residents say that causes problems beyond basic communication. Angel Vieira has had some run-ins with the law in the past, but he says even though he's cleaned up his act, the cops tend to stereotype him, particularly when he's with his white girlfriend.
Yeah, I've been stopped by the cops like the last year, like four times. They thought I was her drug dealer, and the stop was like for 3 hours at one time because they didn't believe that was my girlfriend.
Vieira was in the first bilingual program at Reading High in 1991. He's disappointed that the city is just now starting to catch up to the community, and he wants to see that process accelerate.
It's the lack of people understanding the cultural difference. It's deep. It's deep, and it's a shame that 2015, 2016, we're still going through this.
Vieira might not want to hear this next part. Reading is actually doing better than a lot of cities in the Commonwealth. Allentown's police force is 5% bilingual. Philadelphia, less than 2%. And Hazleton, which is 40% Latino, has one Spanish-speaking officer. Reading found help from an unlikely source. In 2003, the Pennsylvania Statewide Latino Coalition sued the city of Reading over a lack of diversity in the police department. The resulting settlement created a police diversity board headed by Valentin Rodriguez, now the mayor of West Reading.
Numbers of people, scores of people, I should say, came to the police diversity board meetings, and they were documented with their experiences with the issues they had in a language barrier that existed and still exists.
The lawsuit enabled the city to modify civil service exam rules, giving bilingual candidates additional points. Most cities don't have that option, even if they desperately need help attracting Spanish speakers. I toured Hazleton with Frank DeAndrea in November. At the time, he was the city's police chief. When the new mayor came on in January, DeAndrea was let go, but what he had to say still resonates. For DeAndrea, one problem was that recruiting police officers in general is harder than before.
in the 70s and 80s, there were over 100 people that would take the test every year. Last time we gave the test, I had 15 applicants. Four of them passed everything to include the backgrounds.
DeAndrea hired all four. One of them was bilingual. Hazleton, like many cities in Pennsylvania, doesn't have enough funds for recruiting or expanding the force.
It is all we can do to keep our heads above water with the limited staff that we have. I contact the Latino newspapers, the Latinos that I know that are big in the community, and say, we're hiring, could you please tell everybody you know?
Hazleton is also facing a violent crime rate four times the national average. Fewer police officers are working longer shifts, wearing bulletproof vests and carrying automatic weapons. It's not a job that everyone is jumping to take. Realizing that he had all the cops he was going to get, DeAndrea found a creative workaround to the language barrier.
Resolver el crimen.
Good. Re, like that. So it's resol.
He found a Spanish teacher willing to work with some of his officers three times a week for 3 months pro bono. DeAndrea started the program knowing he and his officers wouldn't be fluent anytime soon. But he thought they could at least take the first step to prove that the police are willing to work with the Latino community.
I've got to do something. I can't command the population, speak the language, or you're not getting our help. I am sworn to serve and protect.
Though no longer the police chief, DeAndrea is continuing to serve the city and practice his Spanish as the president of the board at the Hazleton Integration Project, which works to unite different groups in the city. It's not clear whether the new chief will continue the initiatives that DeAndrea set up, but until there's more money in the budget for recruiting or a federal lawsuit to move the needle, the city doesn't have many options. Today, the officers serve and protect. One day, perhaps, more of them will sirven y protegen. Eleanor Klibanoff, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. It takes around 8 minutes for light from our sun to reach Earth. Now let's consider a planet so far out from its parent star, it takes a full month at the speed of light to make the trip. Let's dive into the numbers with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, how can a sun's reach extend that far?
No matter what the distance is, the gravitational reach never really peters out. It just gets infinitesimally small and may be influenced by other things along the way. So this star can reach out this far to this planet and still have it be part of its solar system, even though the distance is 600 billion miles away.
Another way to get at this is, of course, a year on Earth is 365 days. Pluto's year is 248 of our years. What would a year be on this planet?
Yeah, this is really crazy. It's looking like the orbit for this is some 900,000 years.
What?
900,000 years.
What does that sun look like if one were standing on that planet?
It certainly wouldn't stand out anywhere near like our sun does. And if you imagine what our sun looks like from Pluto, we already know that it looks like, you know, a fairly bright star in the sky. That's only at 3.6 billion miles away. At 600 billion miles away, you'd be hard-pressed to immediately identify which star is the parent star. There would be other stars that would appear brighter in the sky.
Derek, moving on, let's note that it was 13 years ago today that Space Shuttle Columbia disintegrated during reentry.
Yes, after a very successful mission, Space Shuttle Columbia on reentry disintegrated after an opening in the leading edge of one of the wings allowed hot gases to penetrate the hull of the spacecraft and destroyed it on reentry. This is a reminder that the loss of life in exploration, no matter what kind of exploration, especially exploration in uncharted environments, is inherently risky. And that's something that all explorers come to accept one way or another. We know that those that are involved in these explorations probably did all they could foresee to drive risk to zero. I mean, that's the number one job of space engineers and explorers, is to try to drive the risk of that exploration for humans to zero. It doesn't always work because there's always a residual amount of risk involved. And the explorers that are involved in this accept that risk, knowing that putting their lives on the line in the acceptance of that risk would be ultimately worth the offer of their last full measure. In the motto of my high school alma mater, Germantown Academy, it is said, "By persevering, we shall see the fruits." And it certainly is believed by all of those who participate in space exploration that the lives that were lost will reveal those fruits to us.
Derek, lastly, tomorrow is an astronomical day of note, sort of. It's Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day. Yes, indeed, it is Groundhog Day. This is what we call one of those halfway points between the first day of winter and the first day of spring. It is a cross-quarter day. These points are really meant for agricultural cultures to be able to mark the transitions during the course of the year in order to set up their schedules for planting, cultivating, and harvesting. We now look back on these as sort of quaint reminders of past times and cultures. Although Punxsutawney Phil will certainly be the celebrity of the day tomorrow, whether or not he sees his shadow has really nothing to do with the motions of the Earth and the Sun in space.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, time up without a space ways incorporated.
That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. This program note, WHYY will air special coverage of the Iowa caucuses from NPR News starting at 9 this evening. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
If you find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing, come on, sign up without a space, Ways Incorporated.
Supporting WHYY, Holy Child Academy is a private Catholic school in Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania, serving boys and girls of many faiths in the Tri-County area. HCA offers kindergarten through eighth grade and a Montessori-based early childhood center. Holy Child Academy offers opportunities to visit every Wednesday morning during Walk-In Wednesdays and is also hosting an open house on Friday, February 5th at 5 p.m. More information at holychildacademy.com.
We're challenging you to support the programs you rely on right now. If 1,000 people make donations by Tuesday at 3 p.m., a good friend of WHYY will give us $25,000. Every dollar helps us continue to bring you more of the in-depth reporting you expect from us. We want to make sure you get the news related to the elections and the Iowa caucus, so we're going quiet with our membership campaign until 3 p.m. tomorrow. Visit WHYY.org to make your gift right now. And thank you. The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. A virtuoso with chops that defy comparison, says the New York Times of Yefim Bronfman. Bronfman joins the Philadelphia Orchestra and conductor Vladimir Yurovsky for Beethoven's Emperor Concerto on Valentine's weekend. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or online February 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th, Valentine's weekend at the Kimmel Center. Beethoven's Emperor Concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra.